Unpack your knives and stay. Yes, stay. Welcome, everybody, to the Top Chef Judges Roundtable. Dunk finally got that one. Woo! Today, I'm joined on this beautiful Saturday morning when you're listening to this. It may be Saturday afternoon, evening, or Sunday morning. Happy Easter and happy belated Passover, I think. That's how that works, right?
Yep.
I'm joined today by a bunch of not trolls. They are, in fact, wonderful people. First of all, I have Antonio Mazzaro with me. Antonio, what is up, my friend?
Speak for yourself, Haley. I will troll anyone and everyone that I can if the cause is right. No, thank you.
I don't think you're living under a bridge anywhere, though.
No, trip, trap. I got out, I'm sure. I'm above the bridge right now, thankfully.
And my favorite theater kid, Mike Bloom.
Hello, I'm here.
Wow, I'm so glad I gave you that right. Setup.
My hair is non-existent this week, and so is the Trolls 2 premiere. So I'm happy we could all acknowledge that. What?
What happened to the hair?
I did my whole little quarantine routine.
Well, I guess I just didn't know what you were talking about because you said I have no hair this week. I was like, are you like completely hairless all of a sudden? Like, what happened?
Yeah, did you do the full body, Mike? Yeah,
well, actually, so admittedly, I don't want to go too off the rails to begin with.
Oh, but God.
I'm someone who would admittedly, will try everything once. So there was a period of time about a few years ago when I'm like, if I nared my whole body, what would that experience be like?
Oh, no. Did you do it?
Yeah, and it was not a very good experience, but I tried it, you know?
Were you allergic to the nair? Because that happened to me when I was a teenager.
No, it just got really bothersome once the hair came back. Like, it's really interesting in retrospective. Like, I could be a swimmer now. And then you're like, I don't want to be a swimmer anymore. I want to be a person.
Did you do your back or did you make your poor wife assist you in this endeavor?
Oh, she assisted me. Yeah.
Oh, dear. All right.
She was gung-ho on the idea, for what it's worth. I did not drag her into this. I did not malarkey her and throw her under the bus.
About you revealing the full body nair on a podcast, though? Do you think she's all in and gung-ho about that? Or
Josh, you and I both know we revealed much worse on this podcast from my own life story. So, like, this does not even make top five, baby.
Haley, who else is here?
You might have heard of Josh Wiggler is here.
I'm scandalized right now. I've got nothing to offer.
And we have Emily Fox, who I'd love for her to give me a quick history of deviled eggs.
Yes. So deviled eggs were called deviled eggs because they had a spicy component to them. So it's from the 1700s. Apparently, everyone was afraid of spice back then. Bad for the stomach, digestion, etc. So that's where deviled eggs came from.
Bad for the constitution.
Yes.
How about the angel eggs? Those are a thing. We were talking before we got on the podcast about eggs.
No, you know what? I think I confused myself with devil's food cake and angel's food cake.
A classic mistake between the devil's food cake and the deviled egg.
What would devil hair pasta be like?
Ooh,
Mike,
like
any thoughts?
Just nair that devil's hair pasta.
Devil hair pasta is what Mike makes when he has no hair anywhere on his body.
And last but certainly not least, and who's very good at not talking until he's called upon, Kurt Clark.
How do we spend like a half hour talking about eggs before we hit the record button and we immediately jump in with nair?
A to C, you know.
Long, beautiful nair.
Let's swap these things next time.
Mike, did you wear short shorts?
Like in my life or like during the whole nair portion?
Nared.
Yeah, nair for short shorts.
Yeah.
I guess so. At certain point to be like, oh, I wonder what this look is like. You know, I certainly had my own little montage to like, I'm coming out, trying on different outfits, walking outside like, and having Angela look at it. And
like Buffalo like, Bill.
Yeah. Exactly.
Oh, no.
I started to dig the pit in my basement until the hair started growing back. And then I got my wits about me. But
awful.
Here we are.
You moisturized, though. You rubbed the lotion on your own skin. That's what you have to.
I have to because, man, it was itchy. It was real itchy. No wonder that guy really needed lotion. I'm telling you.
It puts the nair in the basket.
Oh, my God.
We record these on camera so we can all see each other, as our $20,000 patrons know. And those $20,000 patrons.
I think you downgraded the donation.
No, it's an upgrade.
Yeah, Antonio has moved away from the camera right now because I think he's too scandalized by everything that's
happening. He's crying
here.
That he's involved with this.
Yeah.
Just waiting for the podcast to start.
And he's thinking, even in quarantine, there has to be something better to do on a Saturday morning than hear about Mike Bloom's nair habits. Anyway.
Well, look, here's the thing.
No.
I'm trying to segue Haley, here because no offense.
I can't. We're too far gone.
No offense to our beloved Top Chef, but I do feel like one of the reasons why we've dredged these topics is because it was a fine episode. I was not particularly enthralled. And maybe it's because I'm going to throw out a take here and see what the panel thinks. I've realized I am not a fan of confrontation on Top Chef specifically.
And I feel like you're not a fan of confrontation, like, in general. Like, it's just not your jam.
I don't know, actually. Like, give me, like, the Grateful Alliance falling apart on Big Brother 21.
But
or,
sure,
like,
if I yell at you, you would shut down.
Well, yeah, but I...
Let's try that one out, shall we?
My lack of confrontation, that's because you are Haley Strong, and I would never,
because I also shut down at confrontation.
I would
if anyone slightly raises their tone with me whatsoever, I start crying immediately.
We need a new podcast, Nice People Yelling at Each Other.
I think we need to do a confrontation tournament.
No, that's okay.
Like round robin confrontation.
No, don't confront us with this, Josh.
I'm a Libra. We don't like that stuff.
I'm a Pisces. I'm very sensitive.
I'm a Cancer. I'll take it all personally and not talk to people.
It sounds like we're all like very delicate people.
I am curious, Mike, are there other confrontational moments from the history of Top Chef that stand out to you as like the low points of the show or points that you would never want to revisit? So can you revisit them now, please?
Oh, of course. Let's go down memory lane here. Wafflegate was not fun to watch last season. Oh, yeah. Claudette and Tanya yelling at each other during the Olympics challenge was not very fun. John and Katsuji going after each other during the Charleston restaurant wars was not very fun. Someone getting kicked off for tackling Marcel and attempting to shake his head was not very fun. Lisa getting in fights with everybody for like 7 episodes in a row is not very, like, I don't know if it's just because the format of Top Chef is like, it's not dependent on how other people do. It's more on how you do yourself. But there's something about this particular show and people getting in arguments with each other. And this episode was conclusive of that to me, that like, just doesn't make me feel great. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
It's fun. Go ahead, Kurt.
It's like every so often, like, this is like the one Bravo show where people aren't flipping tables and yelling at each other.
Yeah,
and so it's a little bit weird when it does happen. Well,
they're flipping tables when it comes to restaurant wars. Get more people in. Yeah. That, my friends, is a restaurant joke.
You got us covered with that one. Yeah. It's funny because the episode in the previously on showed Karen talking about how if people have your back in this competition, like, you'll do well. Like, you need to have people that have your back. And I remember just watching the episode thinking, now why is this in the previously on? Like, are we really going to see like full on Top Chef alliances? And is this going to impact Karen's game? Like, why is this a thing they're choosing to highlight as significant from last episode? And I don't know that it directly played out in terms of Karen, but certainly a team challenge where you have to do a progressive dinner. So you have to work together to menu plan. You have to work together to make sure your dishes are in harmony. It sort of invites that conflict to the surface, whether or not the show rests on teamwork or working together or the kind of things that go on in kitchens on a daily basis, trusting the people around you, etc. This particular challenge certainly invites the confrontation and invites the possibility that there will be discord. And it was uncomfortable, but I think understandable. And I certainly, the moments you mentioned, Mike, along with some other ones, Josie is a big, I know I said the name, I'm not going to say it 2 more times, like a Candyman situation. But that was a huge one, right? Where there was this very awkward confrontation, and it does seem to happen a lot more often at restaurant wars. This was sort of a restaurant wars light, because they just had to put one menu together as a team, but they didn't have to do the whole restaurant thing.
But it
invites it. It certainly invites it. And it's not something that's foreign to the show. So it certainly wasn't surprising to see it in this way. And it wasn't surprising to see it play out. We'll get into it, but I have certainly have some takes on the whole confrontation for sure.
Do you have any takes on the troll integration though?
Dude, that was just sad. The whole thing was just like sad.
Yeah.
Sad is right. Yeah.
You know, for like every reason that a thing could be sad, right? Where it's like, oh, trolls. We're doing a trolls quick fire right now. So like the more like present sadness of like
the premiere didn't happen because of coronavirus and now Nini and Greg can't go to the trolls premiere. Yeah, like
Were given a screener and they were allowed to Zoom each other watching.
do you think DreamWorks now owes Gregory like a movie premiere now of like, yes, like set me up Ice Age 6 or something, like get me going.
Is that happening?
They owe Gregory an actual movie. They need to just put him in a movie.
I did appreciate Kelly Clarkson's enthusiasm. I'll say
Has she seen the show before? Awesome.
I don't think she has.
No, no.
She likes she likes the idea of, you know, private chefs cooking for her. Which she's
I love how much Karen loved Kelly Clarkson.
Yes,
huge fan. Yeah. Oh my god! I didn't realize that apparently Since You've Been Gone was the lesbian anthem, is what she said. That was news to me.
I didn't know either, obviously.
I don't think any of us are going to talk about that.
The question I had, though, was, of course, it seemed like Karen, Stephanie, there were a couple of others who were really marking out. Gregory, really excited, saying they love Kelly Clarkson. Who was the most likely chef that was there that had no idea who that
Brian
was?
Brian Boltaggio.
Because he beamed down after 2001, so he has no idea.
Do you think Brian has ever heard a song before?
No.
Like, not even a Kelly Clarkson song, like a
yes.
song.
His favorite song is the Mac startup noise.
Yeah, exactly.
The dial-up modem.
He loves Gregorian chants. Like, I love 16th century music.
I've heard of music. I have great respect for it.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, can you imagine him dancing at a wedding?
Yes, it's terrible.
Yes, it's the robot.
I don't even,
just for 3 hours.
I can just see him doing like this.
Haley's just standing up, turning her body very slowly.
Yeah,
that's the voltage.
Like, occasionally snapping his fingers. I thought Kelly Clarkson was a fun judge. Like, if you're going to have a celebrity judge who admittedly is not the most connoisseur when it comes to cooking, at least have her or like a Randall Park, you know, someone who's going to like bring the energy to it. I feel bad that she had to schlep out this Spawn Con. You know, it's always the most awkward part.
She still got her paycheck for Trolls, which is more than I'm making for the next 4 years. So
it's always the most awkward part of these things, though, whether it's like on a Big Brother or Survivor, where not only are they schlepping out these movies, but they have to watch the trailer and pretend to react to it.
We have to watch them pretend to react to the trailers more painful.
But the good news on this one, and I think it made it funnier for me, is like often like you'll get like, whether it's a movie or it's just some kind of sponsored content, like you get like Karishma on Survivor being like, Applebee's is literally my favorite sit-down restaurant. And so, like, you have to, like, have somebody reflecting on the sponsor. Nobody really reflected on Trolls. They showed the Trolls trailer, and everyone's just like,
Eric's my favorite person to watch. You guys should go back and watch Eric's reaction.
The Trolls franchise is by far and away my favorite franchise.
No, you know who the one person it was? Brian Mullarky, because his daughter loves the Trolls franchise.
I guess that's true.
He knows how to ham it up. He knows what he's doing.
He knows how to get screen time.
He is
no doubt.
Professional.
And I know referenced this on our group chat. Did anybody see the Trolls tie into Drag Race from last week? Or a couple weeks back?
No.
It was during the commercial break, and they had Monet Exchange, Nina, last name escapes me.
Nina Brown.
Thank you. Nina West. Thank you. And Manila Luzon. They had them each do two runway walks in drag in the style of total of six of the musical styles that are featured. They had techno drag. They had country western drag. Nina West did the country western. I think Manila did. I could have that wrong. Regardless, it was during a commercial break. It was an extended commercial, but it was a kind of a great tie-in for the show. And actually, it was interesting. Like, I stopped, I rewound, I watched it. It was a much better tie-in than I think they did here on Top Chef.
Well, I think that, first off, the quick fire, like, knowing the plot of Trolls World Tour, I don't know how I know the plot of Trolls World Tour. Trolls World Tour is essentially Trolls Infinity War, where they're trying to collect six things to unite them and then take over the world.
You had my curiosity.
No, that's legitimately legitimately the plot of it. So they're trying to tie it in by being what, like, you have to take six different colored ingredients and make. And I guess my confusion came a bit from, like, okay, are we honoring the ones that look the most colorful? Right. Or just the ones that use six different foods, and even if it comes out a completely different color.
Yeah, can it be blended together, come out a brown mush, but as long as it tastes great, you've used the six things. Or that was the question I had too. Like, I think it would have been better to visually have that display potentially, but I didn't mind the concept of the challenge. I kind of like these out there challenges. It was just that the troll tie-in was too clunky.
Do these trolls have belly button jewels?
I believe they do. Okay. But it's not a centric point of it.
Well, that's stupid. That's a missed opportunity.
Loved the troll dolls when I was a young lad. They had like the ones that had like camo pants on. I was like, oh, you guys are pretty cool. You're coming home with
and the ones that would come on, you could put on top of the pencil Like where the erythra is, and you go like this and get the hair going.
Josh, were the trolls with the camo pants part of Epsilon Squad for a little while?
Not part of Epsilon Squad. No, the sizes were off, so it didn't
work. They got sized out of Epsilon Squad.
They're too big. They're too big.
I think I missed the troll thing by a couple years, or maybe it just never really came to Canada.
That's because it's been around.
Border, turned back around. Get that shit out of here.
I think there's been a resurgence. Like it's been around a long time. Like
it's been around a long time, but I think it was like when I was young, it was kind of in its low period before it like came up and was cool again.
The trolls live under the bridge, and so they didn't get as far up as you in Canada.
That's fair. We do have a lot of bridges, though. Most lakes per capita, or you know, Canada has the most lakes of any country in the world.
Lakes per capita? Is that a thing?
Definitely have the most lakes per capita.
Country with the most social clout, Canada.
Wow. And if they're living under the bridges in the lakes, then maybe they live underwater.
That's why.
Oh, did you say lakes? I heard lakes.
Lakes.
Oh.
I was wondering why you said that.
They're very popular on social.
That's why in Michigan, you have the UP and the Lower Peninsula separated by Mackinac Bridge. And the Upers call us the trolls because we live under the bridge. And we call them goats because they live over the bridge.
This is my inaction of Michigan. Am I doing a good job?
Yes, you are. Well, technically.
Loving that. Yeah. As Haley is doing hand puppetry. Oh, yeah. She's mimicking with her hands what...
Do Oklahoma.
Can you tell we don't want to talk about this challenge?
This is my thing. I thought this was probably the worst episode of Top Chef of the season, but the best episode of Last Chance Kitchen of the season.
Ooh. I'd agree with that take.
Yeah.
So this challenge was weird, and then they had to do another thing where they had to cook with red hots. Like, how many times do you have to cook with red hots in a single season? Like, this is absurd.
Maybe they had an intern, and all the intern bought with their per diem was a bunch of red hots at a candy store. And they're like, crap, we got to use this somehow.
Why are they stealing the intern's per diem for challenges, though? That feels like a lawsuit.
It's funny because we are sort of just having a hard time talking about the quick fire, but I thought the chef testants did as well. Like even in the confessionals, Nini's like, I wanted to make some pasta. I never did this with the purple potato. I don't know. Maybe it'll work. And like Brian was he wasn't very high on his dish. Malarkey, Stephanie wasn't very high on her dish. It was like, even in confessional after the fact, they could not just muster up any sort of energy to sell the dish that they were trying to make. It felt to me like it fell flat. But it was interesting that Gregory wins it, right? And he wins it with a soup. And we have a soup win the main challenge
a hack? Soup. It's a soup resurgence.
Yes, the season of soup. Well, remember Top Chef season 13 when it was like what's that name of the dish that you wrap up in like the plastic wrap that Carl got eliminated?
Tureen?
Yeah, that was the season of like tureen and Dungeness crab. I feel like this is going to be the season of soup. And
well,
Gregory,
thank God,
said,
I'll pick the soup season. I'll have the soup.
Chef soups instead of just desserts. Soups.
I want to ask Emily though, because it feels like we got a lot of like opinions about soup this episode, and I feel like it's not coincidental since two soups won. But this idea of like creating a soup is like the hardest thing to do, and like figuring out a harmony. From your perspective, is that true? It all is there validity to that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways in which people can make soup and it's just fine. I think to make a really good soup, it takes some refinement, right? And especially watching Melissa work on the corn soup, I think there's a lot to be said for having something that does speak volumes and requires a lot of work on like several levels, like having the different components that she added to the dish, having that sort of fusion of ingredients where you're not like, ew, what is this lumpy stuff? Because I feel like a lot of the time, I don't know, I'll quote Ina Garten on this, but she's always like, it's
don't
hard
have to- any fun without me.
No, yeah.
Oh, it's a different quote.
No, she often will be like, I really love this type of soup, but like you puree it and it turns into a baby food consistency, right? Mm. So like there's always sort of a risk you take when you're pureeing foods and you're combining foods together. When you're marrying different flavors, and soup is sort of the epitome of that, right?
It's interesting. I feel like is a way to fix that, it seems like, and I think this came up in the quickfire. I feel like some people add a lot of cream to soups to try to fix some of that consistency or to make it feel more rich. Gregory really threads the needle by not doing that, right? By he's making a vegan soup, and the fact that he's able to do that and still nail all those things that you're talking about, Emily, feels like a real significant win. And I couldn't tell. It seemed like Melissa might have done the same. I don't know if there was any cream in her winning dish. I know there was coconut milk, but I don't know how heavily she leaned into some of the textural elements.
Yeah. It's just, it does speak volumes that, like, I think a lot of soups have been succeeding in this, because if you think about a regular dish and how it's constructed, you can pull a piece out of, like, you know, sort of a mound of food. I don't know how to say that better than I just did.
I'm picturing Jenga.
Okay. No, you know what I mean though? Like, there are certain components where people can be like, oh, she really executed this well, and this piece kind of fell flat for me. Whereas in a soup, you really have to have everything together or else you're just entirely failing as a dish.
I want to know Kurt's opinion on the blackberries that were on Malarkey's dish for the quickfire, which was a curry pumpkin ice cream with blackberry, raspberry, strawberry, caramel, and cotton candy.
How do you not end up in the bottom for this?
Because he tried, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I was surprised he was in the bottom, especially the way it looked like he was having some major issues with the ice cream machine.
It always happens. Just watch a food show, you idiots. Don't ever make the ice cream.
Or go to a McDonald's. The ice cream machine never works.
Sometimes it works, and sometimes that's great, but it's few and far between. Stop trying to make the ice cream, you dummies.
Here's the thing. I would have tried it. That's all I can say. But the fact is, I've had to go back to my notes, I think, three times over the past 24 hours to remember what the quickfire was. And when 83% of the dishes contained blackberries, that's not a good sign that I'm not remembering these dishes.
Yeah.
How about the blackberry dust on Eric's dish? That was
I was a little surprised. I don't know. Again, maybe if you were going for like purely, if you're using those eye tongues, I feel like Eric's would have been one that I would have been interested in, because it did feel like the one that used the most color, and Eric purposely went for that. And I know that, like, I don't know. I forget how Top Chef views salad. We just talked about how they view soups, but I forget if they look down on salad or if they're like, a salad's a really, you know, complicated thing to construct. Like,
well, I mean, that's essentially what Malarkey delivers in the opening of his team in the farmer's market, is like a tomato and burrata salad. And they're like, what the fuck?
I at least appreciate Eric's attempt to almost like keep it kind of on a troll theme, because I think he called that frozen berry dust like fairy dust at one point, like in terms of almost trying to keep it like fun and whimsical. But I also wonder if, like, is that the easier route? Like, take all these colored berries and use them, versus the people who tried to, like, was it like the purple gnocchi, even though it didn't really end up, you know, going over well, I think that was interesting. Or like people who tried to incorporate that cotton candy in some way. So I appreciate the people who took a risk to try to, who use the quick fire to take a risk, except for when it's a sudden death quick fire, which we haven't seen.
Vitalgio's ceviche made me want to puke. Like, it looks so gross.
Yeah, it looked gross, unfortunately.
Does Kevin win the battle of the ceviches then between the two?
Yeah.
Even though I believe Kevin also had an Angelo-like way to pronounce that turmeric particular spice. Yeah.
Oh, I believe that. Well, maybe I just like Kevin more than I like Angelo. And I'm loving him.
How dare you?
You love Kevin.
I know, but
do you guys
I love
have
Angela
anything more on this quickfire? Can we move past it and never think about it for the rest of our lives?
Blueberry and blackberry dust, I was immediately taken back to the Smurf village.
Yeah,
and I wanted to see something to that effect. Like, it
Uncle Antonio, who's your favorite Smurf? You got to have an answer to this.
I mean, Papa Smurf is Karl Marx, so it's Papa Smurf.
Amazing.
And if you don't know, you know.
Yeah,
there's some thesis that's been written by Antonio in the past decade. Let's
go on from there.
Oh no, now Josh, I think you just like manifested a Smurfs quick fire coming up later this season.
What'd you say about manifests? Yeah. Manifested? Sorry.
Oh yeah, that's a
I gotta say, and just when you were talking, Kurt, about just the efforts to make the dish versus make the dish look good, and the things you were doing, the blackberries, I thought Eric doing the dust was very cool. I shouldn't say doing the dust. That's a correct thing. Eric making the dust was really cool. And if you look at the ingredients on his dish, if you just read those out, that you took such copious notes: shrimp and prosciutto salad, frozen strawberry, blueberry, and blackberry dust with a bell pepper and chili pepper vinaigrette. Sounds pretty awesome, and something I would definitely eat. And I got to say, as a transition to the elimination challenge, I am fascinated by the dessert that he made in this dish. Of all the dishes that we saw from both the top, the elimination and the quick fire, that is the most interesting one to me. It blew my mind what he did with that dessert.
Especially, and the Angelo went home for like, is it a salmon dish or is it a dessert dish? And like here we have, this is kind of actually making seafood and dessert work.
Yeah, he just, I mean, Eric is, he is doing a lot of very interesting stuff. And I just think really validating the fact that even though he was just on last season, and it feels like, okay, what are we going to really get by bringing him back? Because he maybe hasn't grown as much as a chef, or we're not seeing new things for him, or seeing how his Top Chef experience changed him. I think what we are seeing is how he can make really, really interesting dishes that are bringing something different to the table that not all the chefs are. I mean, it's very telling, I think, that, and then this is no knock to them, that Brian and Kevin both do a ceviche and both have basically similar ideas of what they're doing. And we see a lot of straightforward dishes in the elimination challenge. What Eric's doing, I think, is next level and really just impressed. I'm looking for him to have his moment in the season where he is on the top and wins a challenge. So
I would say that like we would all agree with the fact that we saw why Eric was on All Stars, and I don't think that we felt like he needed time off to like grow as a chef. I think he was right there. He could have won that season easily. Yep. And I think that like, I don't really even think this is a redemption season for him. I think it's like just another showcase for how brilliant
he still had gas in the tank.
Yeah. I think, you know,
if the challenge wasn't such bullshit at the end of last season and like you get snipped because your preview dish isn't good enough, which is such an unfair treatment of the achievements that he had unleashed upon that season in the run-up to that, if he's allowed to do his really compelling idea for a full course menu, there's a very strong chance that he won last season.
Yeah.
So I definitely feel like, but it isn't like a redemption thing. It is literally like, no, I'm not done.
No, it's like he's carrying the momentum he had in last season and just bringing it to All Stars. It's just a continuation of of his story with Top Chef. Like it's almost like there was no break, and I'm so happy that he's back.
Me too. I think he's so intellectual about how he presents everything too. He's just such a compelling person and chef to watch. Like I'm psyched he's here.
Yeah, and he's bringing he's bringing such a new POV too. Like that's the other great thing about this dessert is like it mixes together like these fruity flavors with the chocolate and the hazelnut. And I'll admit, I'm definitely not someone who's mixing together fruit and chocolate, but like I'll take the judges for their opinion. I was nervous, I'll admit, initially, especially going up against someone like Nene, who we saw her crush that patisserie challenge last season. Like even she says in confessional, like, listen, I don't want to be cocky, but I absolutely know I have this. And plus going into the challenge, I wasn't sure if it was going to be a thing of like, you know, advantage to red team or advantage to blue team. So from that perspective, Eric could have been in trouble. It seemed like it was more judged on just like an individual basis, which is why the entire team, including Eric, got commendations across the board, which I feel like is a vast, vast rarity in Top Chef.
Yeah, it was hard to know who was going to win. I kind of thought that Gregory was going to win because like everybody seemed to like be really thrilled about the grilled carrots. And then for me personally, I was like, I'm loving Melissa this season, and I'm not even a huge soup guy. But a corn soup sounds like a corn soup from Melissa sounds awesome.
Especially like paired with that lobster wonton from the last episode.
Exactly. Like her sauce broth soup work must just be stellar.
Melissa knows liquids.
She's got crazy. She's got crazy momentum right now, I feel like, with Melissa.
And she's team.
I'm loving just sort of like the quiet, like, you know, like pizzazz that she's bringing to everything. Like the confessional you get from her after she wins. It's like, yeah, I'm coming for you. Like, I'm loving Melissa this season. I think that she's an obvious front runner right now, obviously, with two wins in a row. But I think that there's also just like sort of that, like, that I know that Top Chef doesn't really do this, but like, it's hard not to apply like the way that you look at some of these other types of shows and not apply it a little bit. She just has like sort of that like quiet, cool, calm, collected winner energy right now.
Speaking of front runners, when the team shook out, was it obvious which team was going to win?
Yes.
For me, it was, yeah.
Oh, before the
was it obvious to you that the blue team was going to win?
Yeah, that's the stacked squad. I think like other than
Jen?
Voltaggio, you know, like Voltaggio on the red team is like one of those like front runner winner candidates right now, I think, just because he's Brian Voltaggio, not necessarily because of how he's performing this season. I think just like on that optically of like who seems like somebody who's got that big winner energy. They're all on the blue team.
PWE.
I would say that I saw that they had the advantage, but I was never like, and they're going to win. Because I think anything can happen. Somebody can turn up Jen's stovetop and, you know, ruin part of her day. You know, it could be just like one thing happens and it ruins everything. So while I thought that they had, yes, they had the more stacked team, as was pointed out to us, they had the advantage, but I was far from certain until after the first few dishes.
Yeah, but that they were going to win. Told me that like the final six of this season was Kevin, Melissa, yeah. Karen, Gregory, Jen, and Eric. Like that makes sense.
I was about to say, I totally had the same thought of like, I could very easily, maybe with the exception of Jen, but I could very easily see this. Like if you switch out, honestly, Jen for Voltaggio, I could see this honestly might be like our group of front runners at this point. And I think for me, it was that they were, again, maybe with the exception of Jen, the most consistent chefs we've seen so far. And it seemed like also they were pretty mellow personalities. And when it came to, you know, these team challenges are also tough because they're cooking their own dish, but especially when you're going into like progressive meals, they need to build upon one another. And honestly, just take a look at like whatever team Brian Malarkey's on is not going to have the best cohesiveness, to be quite blunt. And we saw that in this episode.
Is that because he's all over the place?
I mean, he is, though. I mean, he like, I don't know, he didn't take the lead as much as he did during that initial beach challenge, but like, he still was the most palpably vocal person, I felt like, on that other team. And I think, you know, they really highlighted the fact that him and Leanne were not communicating with each other until they maybe communicated too much at each other at the judges' table, that, you know, they put out two not similar dishes, but ones that did not build upon one another. It wasn't a sequel. It was a reboot of what Leanne put out after Malarkey.
As soon as I heard crudité, I was like, oh, man.
Yeah.
Like, I know you can make crudité well, but like, is that really the thing you want to bring out unless you like picked the carrot yourself? Like, you know, like, I don't know.
Well, and it's very telling that that is the dish that seems so difficult. Like, why was she struggling so much to get that out? It is not the most complicated thing in the world. I think she overcomplicated it because it was a crudité, and she wanted it just to be so inch perfect and every little detail to be nailed on. It's shocking to me that we saw Melissa just calmly plating and Leanne with the crudité just really like the kitchen was on fire and all hands on deck. And the judges saw it too, obviously. And
yeah.
I was surprised that Leanne did not go home.
I was Ethan and I were sitting here watching the episode and both being like, I was like, it's going to be Leanne. And he's like, it's going to be Brian. And then when it was like, all right, see you later, Lisa. We're both
Lisa
like,
Lisa was out of nowhere.
What?
The only thing that may have indicated for me was in the previously on, they randomly mentioned her Jewish Portuguese brisket last episode. Right. I'm like, that's a weird thing to put out. And so I guess, yeah, I don't know. Leanne, man, has become our bottom goddess.
She has nine lives. She's like a cat.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know how much we want to talk about next week, but I do not think it's looking good for her next week either.
I don't watch the preview, so.
All right. Well, we won't get into it then. But yeah,
we could do an entire podcast about the preview for next week. Let me just say that. I mean, yeah. I won't say any more, but there is a lot.
I don't remember it at all.
Next week looks crazy. It seems like a lot of might be a tough episode for Mike Bloom because it seems like a lot of drama. It's going to be a very dramatic episode, Mike.
The most dramatic episode of Top Chef ever, Haley.
I mean, it kind
of
looks like it.
Please, I'm going to.
Oh,
like,
yeah, I remember it now. Yep.
Have an aneurysm or something. Yeah, like so many people are like, Haley, are you guys going to cover Listen to Your Heart now that The Bachelor's it's not going to come back? And we're like, probably.
God. I will admit, though, Listen to Your Heart is like maybe the one time I'm actually slightly intrigued by a Bachelor series because I have no idea what this
How
entails.
How dare you?
Underreported. It's time for a message from our sponsor. Check that timer. I think we're done.
I will say I was really excited about a vegetable forward challenge.
Same.
I love when they can't rely on meat to carry them through. And I think that vegetables are such an important part of food. And to see them really highlighted was awesome. And to see them go to the Santa Monica Market and like see what's fresh and there that day. It's all local, and I thought that was a really wonderful way to highlight
it's an
the challenge.
Market,
it's
yeah, really cool to see that.
I also love that there was nary a mushroom actually on the plate.
The mushroom guy didn't show up.
The mushroom guy didn't show up. But I always find that it's really frustrating that everyone just always defers to the mushroom as like the meat replacement.
Exactly.
And I have a couple of friends who are vegetarian who don't like mushrooms, and they're just always like, oh, come on, there's so much other great stuff you can use in place of a meat or a protein.
Also,
so.
These friends you're talking about, though, are babies.
Yeah, I know. It's like a texture.
You're friends
thing.
With babies?
Yes. They're literal infants.
No. But I kind of loved that was sort of a big issue.
Yeah, you can't just like make a shroom burger.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the guy who brings the mushrooms didn't show up, and like that was the point of the challenge, is like, you have to do what's here. And I felt like it was great that nobody could fall into the Angelo trap of being like, this is my dish and that's what I'm doing. It doesn't matter what the parameters of the challenge are. So I really did love this challenge. I don't know. Like, did you like watching it though? I felt like there was maybe like some
Fox
charm missing.
Fox and I may have had a different experience because we've dined at the restaurant where this took place.
No, the Jeremy Fox, no relation to Emily Fox.
No, it wasn't at
Birdie G's.
It was at his other restaurant.
Well, we've been the guy who owns it, Rusty Canyon. We've been to
Jeremy
a lot,
Fox.
And so
I'm Emily's cousin, Jeremy Fox.
We spent a lot of time looking for a particular waiter because there's a waiter at Rusty Canyon who is like one of Emily and my favorite people on the planet.
He's literally there every time we go, and we go to Rusty Canyon maybe every 2 years.
He's just like a very obnoxiously like over attentive waiter who
he's
just
not obnoxious.
No,
sweet.
He's a sweetheart, but he said something to you about skin contact wines that you've never been
I
able
ordered
to,
an orange
to let
wine
go.
And he was like, oh, so you're into skin contact wines? And I was like, yeah, I like red wine too, like that's always been a thing.
So we were on the lookout for that guy.
Yeah,
he wasn't
I was
there,
really
as
hoping he'd
see.
Be in like
he's prolific
area
he's
with all
he's
the
incredible.
Other diners
great but. Character well,
I like how
I love that guy.
Tom and Pam are surprised. Oh, the dinner rushed. We got here just in time. It's like, you know, these people were lined up outside waiting until they were told by production to go in. Like,
I thought the setup was really funny too, where they're at like the bar eating and then like everyone else is like dining around them. When they sat at the bar, I was like, is there people coming to eat at the restaurant?
Do you guys like sitting at the, like, because there's a restaurants that have seats there, right? Where you can like look into the kitchen. Do you guys like sitting in there when you dine out?
Only if every other table in the restaurant is taken. And like, if I would have had to wait 20 minutes to sit at a table or sit at the bar, like I'd choose the bar. Like, it's not really my thing.
Yeah. Notoriously, Josh and I, whenever we dine out, I get wrapped up in whatever's going on for service. So I'll watch as hostesses and waiters try to get things together where like, people are uncomfortable and like can't order or like are having trouble like getting like flagging someone down. So sitting at a bar scenario when chefs are talking to one another or trying to like help each other
like
out.
You can't
or,
not like, look away. Is
yeah,
your thing. Yeah.
I get really sucked into that. So
dinner and like, a show.
Yeah. So the, like Josh and I don't really talk in those moments.
I do. I think I like in a well-run place. I think I like a chef's table experience better than just about any, though, because it's so fun to watch. Like you said, and Mike, dinner and a show. It's just really good to watch a well-organized machine run well. And even when things come up or, you know, something wasn't fired that should have been or something's behind or there. I mean, even when you see those issues, it's just really interesting to watch how that all plays out and the communication and the silent moves and the loud moves and just the way everyone interacts. I do find that to be in the right place, a really fascinating experience. So it can go either way. Certainly watching the red team here was not ideal for watching Harmony, and it was not ideal for focusing on the food. Yeah, because you're focusing on what was happening back there.
It's funny. It was funny to me that the first three people on the red team were the ones who really like didn't do so well. And then everyone else did fantastic. So,
yeah, the judges were like, hey, the red team caught up eventually, even if they had a really bad start.
Yeah. So like, I wonder if they kind of like front loaded the people who they felt were a little bit weaker. Like on purpose or I don't know.
I don't know. I feel like Brian Malarkey is like, I got this guy.
I guess so. Yeah.
I got my tomato dish. Let me put it out there.
He's Alexis Michelle of Top Chef.
Yeah, exactly. He's a producer.
Just the description of it. I mean, I would eat that. I'd be very happy. I would order it. Yeah. I would order tomato burrata and sherry and champagne. But if it's
That's something you could think of doing yourself.
Exactly.
Right. That's what Gail said.
That's the level of complexity that you're bringing to it. Like, this is Top Chef All Stars 2.
Well, I was saying to Josh, when we heard sort of the rundown of both teams and what they're expecting to put together, when the red team said everything that they were going to cook, I looked at him and I said, okay, this sounds all right, but I don't love that crudité choice. And I feel like the tomato and burrata is like, whatever. When the blue team started explaining what each individual dish was going to be for their challenge, I was like, okay, this is more gourmet. This sounds more refined. It sounds like a little bit more put together. Like, people have really thought about it. Everyone seems a little bit more confident. And like, not to say that things need to be more gourmet, but it felt more polished just from the get-go.
Yeah, well, Tom really talked about that, right? About this idea of cohesion, that you're going up steps in a staircase, that you're not taking a step and then one of the steps breaks and then or goes off in a different direction. Mm-hmm. And it seems like the red team, just mainly with those first two courses, I think really set a not so great tone. But I mean, to the point about the malarkey stuff, I mean, we get this all the time. I think it's one of like the testaments of Top Chef, which is if you're going to do a blank and blank is insert simple food here, it has to be the best blank that the judges have ever tasted. Exactly. So if you're going to do a crudité, it has to be the best crudité they've ever had. If you're going to do like tomatoes on a plate, it has to be the best version. And Gail said it best when she said, like, this is a beautiful dish that we have seen many times done before. And you could say that maybe they need to step up their game because it's All Stars, but I just feel like it's a good rule to follow in Top Chef of like, good on you, Malarkey, for considering the editing comment and going simple. But that being said, simple does not necessarily mean like, I'm just going to throw a few ingredients on. Like, it needs to still pop, even if it is something simpler than what you're used to.
Yeah, it was interesting to me because you talk about recognition of that and the edit and stuff like that in terms of not the edit of the show, but knowing that he needs to edit and taking that comment to heart. I think at least at some point he really thought that he was doing the right thing by making that dish, that it wasn't a bad issue with progression. There's a point in the episode, hilariously, by the way, where they show him watching Stephanie during prep and thinking that she's using cheese and saying, how are you going to use the cheese? And she's like, it's melon, or what was it, squash?
I can't remember. Squash, yeah.
It was not cheese.
And I could see it. It looked like cheese, though. It looked like little blocks of cheese.
It did. It really looked a lot like cheese. But he says in a confessional right after that, like, I think our menu is great. I think the progression really works. Like, so he's saying, I guess what the producers tell him to do, or I don't know when that talking head was recorded. Is it recorded before the fact, after the fact? I don't know. But he's doing a really interesting thing there, because later in the episode, in the moment, after he's had the critique, he does one of my favorite things that a person can do, which is he interviews himself and he says, was it a challenging enough for the situation? No. Should I challenge myself a little more? Yes. It's like, you know, he's just producing himself. Like, he's literally putting it out there, knowing exactly the questions that he would be asked. So in the moment, it seemed like he knew that it was wrong. But he also gives a talking head earlier where he says he thought it was a good idea. So I don't know when these things are recorded, but he's definitely all over the place with what he's doing. I can see, like you were saying, Mike, I can see the thinking behind what he was doing a little bit. Maybe not the best idea, but I can at least see what he was thinking when you put it together. And he articulates it and saying, Leanne was talking about her dish, sounded a little more robust. I was going to do something different. I scaled it back because I wanted to have that progression there. So I don't find him at fault for what was wrong with what they were doing. I really think of all the sinners, like, he was pretty low on the list, to be fair.
And it seemed like between like the three who were on the bottom, Brian, Leanne, and Lisa, it seemed like issue one, Brian and Leanne's dishes were too similar. Individually, yep. Brian's was almost like too simple, didn't really showcase much, was very basic. Leanne's had some slight flavor issues, which Brian may or may not have contributed to. But it was Lisa's, it sounded like there was just like poor cooking there in terms of the Brussels sprouts weren't fried all the way through. Like, there was like an issue with what Lisa had put together. So I think that's why she went home. That's how I kind of compartmentalized the feedback that they got on those three. I don't know if anybody else feels differently.
That makes sense.
Yeah. How did you guys feel about the whole like refined versus rustic thing that, you know, that she sort of like is pushing back by being like, hey, that's just not how I cook. And the judges are like, yeah, you could still like, you don't need to create like a, you know, you don't need to tweezify things, mm-hmm. but like, just make sure that your Brussels sprouts are cooked the entire way through and we'll be happy.
Yeah. I think she was taking it as they didn't like her style, but it was like, there was actually a flaw in your cooking.
And unlike Jamie in last week's Last Chance Kitchen, she owned up to it. She was like, yep, Brussels sprouts got it. I need to do better.
So she wasn't like, well, because my dish was third, it was cold by the judges, or the lukewarm, I suppose. I will also say that maybe it's a hot take. I'm not a huge fan of like baked fruit. That's why I'm more of a vegetable person than a fruit person. So like, when we hear about these temperature things with the apples, even if the apples weren't necessarily folded in, I'm like, oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
Do you not like pie?
I'm not a fan of fruit pies, no.
Oh, wow. You would not get along with my dad.
I love fruit pies, but I prefer them cold.
Ah, interesting.
So it's baked.
I would eat them either way. My mom used to make me an apple pie for my birthday for breakfast every single year.
Oh, I love Canada so much. Awesome. I want to go to there.
That's like the greatest thing I've heard in a long time.
Yeah, every year she'd make me an apple pie for my birthday, and I'd eat it for breakfast before going to school.
That is amazing.
I love apple pie. I love applesauce.
Yep.
You add applesauce into any dish, I'm into it. I'm a person who likes a little bit of a sweet component to savory foods. I do take pineapple on my pizza every single time. I love it. I like the sound of her dish. I don't love Brussels sprouts, but I think I would have liked them fried. But again, there was just an issue in the actual cooking. Like the Brussels sprouts were maybe too big. They weren't fried long enough. They were done in too big of batches. Like whatever it was that happened, like it was a technical issue. It wasn't a style issue.
Yeah. And it's like you have to ask, like the judge is probably then going back saying, well, how much do we weigh the progression of the progressive dinner, the progressive menu versus like a purely technical issue, even if the progression was OK.
But how much do you think Brian Malarkey's hat stunk like Brussels sprouts after that?
Because
that's the thing. It's like,
is what you think about while you're watching, Mike?
I do, because my wife, you know, it's very sensitive to smells. And so she always remarks that like when she cooks, your clothes end up usually smelling like the thing that you cook. And we noticed, we talked about this last week, that Brian Malarkey is wearing, it's not even a Newsies hat. It's like one of those over the top like golf hats that you would wear with like the high pantaloons.
Love a high pantaloon.
And I feel like he's going to, like, why would you bring that into the kitchen? Because, you know, inevitably that thing is going to reek of whatever you were directly cooking. And Brussels sprouts, I feel like, are a rather pungent
fart
vegetable.
Smells.
Yeah, well, especially when it's not fried, when it's roasted.
Mm. Yeah, but that dissipates pretty quickly.
Not in that hat.
He just like takes it off of his head and like wafts it out into the
air. I bet that thing is a leech for scents, and it just smells disgusting at this point.
I don't want to smell the inside of anyone's hat, to be perfectly honest.
That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
Hot take.
I also didn't love the way Lisa was, like, somebody asked her, oh, do you want this dish to be served hot? And she was like, no, I wanted the apples to be like a scooch warm, and I wanted the Brussels sprouts to be like barely hot. And it's like,
don't go for that temperature, Lisa.
Well, like good try and save it. That was like your purpose. But like, whoever fries food and is like, I'd like really good warm, when you wait an hour.
Like episode one, we learned glue is not a word you should use to describe your food. And I think we learned in episode four that lukewarm is also a word you should not be using.
Well, compare that to Brian Malarkey, who like has the perfect response when Pam is like, did you want your ice cream to be curdled? He's like, yep, that's exactly what I was going for. Like, I say just ask it right back to them. Of like, that's exactly, like, listen, you and I both know this was a mistake. But Lisa, like we were talking about, like fully swung into that. But yeah, the temperature did not sound great. I think to your point, Haley, and I asked Lisa about this in my exit interview that I did with her, I think she said her issue was that I think it was just too big of a batch, and I think that because she wasn't able to pay enough close attention, she was not able to essentially fine pick each Brussels sprout to put on the plate, and so it really ended up being much more of a mixed bag than making sure she picked the best of the best.
It sounded like she was able to hand pick them off the truck though.
Yeah, exactly, but something was not able to hand pick them onto the plate.
Yeah.
How is there only one mushroom guy at the whole farmer's market?
I want to hear that story of this guy like muscling all the other mushroom guys out of the farmer's market.
Exactly.
The only one.
Yeah.
There's threats have been made.
I'm expecting like a Heisenberg like guy to take control of the mushroom monopoly at the farmer's market.
His name is Craig.
And he always has dirt under his fingernails.
When things get back to normal, I will go to the Santa Monica Farmers Market and question the mushroom guy. I will find out.
Might be the last we'll hear from you.
I will find out if
bring a Zoom microphone with you and perform a field interview, and we will release it as a podcast.
I will Instagram live my journey through the market looking for how many mushroom vendors there actually are. And Craig, where were you? I do want to see if his name is
this
Craig.
This is like the new cereal.
Exactly.
Shroomerol.
But yeah. But I've been to the, when I lived in Chicago, there was a farmer's market literally just down the street from me, like about 200 feet, which was really convenient and nice. And since I've been here in California, I've been to the one in Calabasas, a grand total of one time. And it's great. I need to do this more. So I look forward to when things get to normal, I will visit the Santa Monica market.
Yeah.
You have my word.
Okay. It's on the record.
It's on the record.
We will be sure to report it at the appropriate level of reportage required.
Which will be probably way too in-depth, given us.
I want to talk for a second about Karen's pasta. Because I don't know.
No,
I don't know.
Don't think that. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Well, I want to sort of keep on keeping on with like Antonio's Karen watch here, because here's another like pretty good episode for her. Like I thought she was another person who like could have easily won. They really loved her pasta, and they specifically loved the fact that despite making a pasta dish, the pasta was not the star, which is like a critique that I feel like cuts both ways. You know,
Joe Sasto is fuming.
Yeah, especially since like he didn't realize all the times he talked about pasta in this LCK that we'll get to. But yeah, they said it had perfect chew, like, and I thought it looked really great as well. If you're talking about like a green dish that's very green forward color wise she produced that. We get this Padma's Angels, the alliance gets named that in this episode. So
this is my dream come true. There's nothing I love more than Karen, Nini, and Stephanie calling themselves Padma's Angels.
That was fun. I forgot about that.
Everything
sequence.
I've ever wanted. Yeah, I meant to call you guys my Padma's Angels.
Yeah, this is like the polar opposite of the Bears from a few seasons ago. Yeah.
Bears. So Tom said something on Twitter. Is like, does that make me Charlie?
Bosley?
Or Bosley? Yeah.
So is the opposite of Padma's Angels Tom's Devils?
I see where you went with that.
Yeah, callback, kind of. Weak?
No, it was good. You called back directly.
Turns out the devil's hair is just a shaved head.
Listen, Tom and I know where it's at. Tom tried it like I did, and he's like, I like this. I'm going to stick with it.
I really thought we might be able to get through this without bringing it back up.
This is Mike's slow transition to full Calico.
Oh, God.
Oh, boy.
It's a full bloom.
I just want to talk about the Nair.
Yeah.
No, let Antonio talk. He's trying to get us back on track.
Karen had a great episode. We got to hear more, as we have in the past, about Karen's spouse and her outside of the show life. And that's always interesting. I thought it was hilarious when she's talking to her spouse and trying to drop jokes about Kelly.
And they
Carson.
Were like, that was mean.
Yeah, it's like, I've been better since you've been gone.
Yeah, it's easier to breathe now.
Well, that's rude.
Wow, asshole.
Okay. I would have been hurt. If I were them, I would have been like, I am hurt by that.
I mean, I guess you realize that Kelly Clarkson like has some very shady song titles and that maybe you shouldn't use that to make references.
It was very funny.
I miss you, but what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, I suppose. I mean, there could have been different ways you could have built this in.
Yeah, some people wait a lifetime for a moment of like this when I'm not with you.
Oh my God. Maybe now that she's by herself, she just feels like Miss Independent.
Exactly. Oh, piece by piece, I'm getting over you not being here.
Is this the B-side?
Josh said American Idol.
Someone doesn't know what we're talking about.
When I was young, I used to just play Neopets for hours while listening to the Kelly Clarkson album, just like on repeat.
Like a Tamagotchi?
Yeah. What? I think that's Neopets, I think, are like Tamagotchi.
Neopets is definitely not like Tamagotchi. No.
It's like an odd.
There is the mini game subculture within the internet community that is Neopets.
I think we're showing our ages where like I wasn't really in troll culture and you guys were really in Neopet culture.
I have no idea what we're talking about.
Right.
Oh, no. Teddy Ruxpin.
Neopets, are those the rocks that you get?
Chia.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? I'm going to go get my chia pet right now. BRB.
Oh, wait. Hey, okay. This is unprecedented.
Oh, my God.
Nobody has ever left the recording sessions here on the Top Chef podcast before. No one has ever stepped away from the microphone.
Never.
At any point in time during the recording of Top Chef. But Haley Strong has just walked away. Unprecedented.
It makes sense given the elimination challenge, too. Yeah. Like, this is a very veg-forward toy.
Haley has returned. This is for our $20,000 patrons who already know this, but for everybody else. Haley has returned with a chia pet.
She has
a chia pet. It's a cat.
It's like a cat with mange.
It's a cat.
How dare you?
Haley, you're gonna want to nair that cat.
Yeah. I love it.
To describe the cat has sprouts. There's sprouts that are
I believe they're chia sprouts. They're chia
How long ago was this? Did you start this, Haley?
I'd say maybe a week and a half.
Can you lift the chia pet just a little bit higher? Now bring it a little bit more center. Good, good.
What are you
going
to do, Josh?
All right, I just got a screenshot of that.
Yeah, we're screenshotting this.
Okay, so
I'm just putting
screenshots
together
the chia pet
is the same.
My whole hand was in my mouth when you did that screenshot.
I also just put that together when we were growing it, and I asked Ethan, I was like, "What kind of plant is this going to be?" He's like, "Chia." We got it for Christmas because Ethan's parents got it for us because it kind of looks like our own cat. And so Ethan tried to tried to start it once, but what he did was he just like did the like mix the seeds with water and you rub it on the thing and that's all he did, and he like would spray it and obviously it didn't work because you have to fill the thing with water and keep it filled with water, and like that's how it mostly sprouts. Anyways, we're pretty proud of this.
Nice.
What do you do when it's done?
What a great question.
All right. Life after chia.
We don't know.
Do you prune it like a bonsai
empty
tree?
Nesters, you know, you
like, can I use
a smoothie?
Can I like season things with chia? Like, I don't know. I don't know how any of this works.
You like a little bit on the show.
Yeah, chia seed pudding is a nice dessert.
But the seeds are now sprouts. Like, I can't like redo it, you know, whatever. Anyway, so yeah, I have that. I've been trying to grow some basil, parsley, and chives in the window there, and I have like the tiniest little sprout chive, and then I had an avocado the other day, and we're gonna try and make an avocado plant.
I mean, I have two. It took a really long time.
I'm really bad at gardening. Let me show you this succulent I also have here.
All right, so Haley is now.
This is very Alexis Rose Schitt's Creek. The succulent died.
For the $19,999 patrons who cannot see this, Haley is now holding up her succulent, and it's sad, Haley.
It's emphasis on suck.
Yeah.
To be fair to me, this was my best friend's wedding favor from her wedding last May. So it's not that. It survived a while.
It outlasted the marriage too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
She's due with her baby anytime now, Antonio.
Sorry. I was just checking. You never know with those succulents. Sometimes they do.
And then I don't know if you can see over the shoulder. I have a nice cactus going too.
Oh hell yeah.
Okay.
And it's surviving. Well, I'm not going to pick it up because last time I picked it up, it pricked me and it hurt.
It looks like it's talking because there's a little thought bubble above it on the pole.
Yeah. Anyway.
I had a succulent at my wedding.
This has been Haley's plant
on my suit, and Emily and I danced on the dance floor and she ripped it off my suit. She threw it on the ground.
Oh, dang.
Emily!
Because she knew what Antonio knew, that succulents are the cursed plant of marriages, apparently.
Yeah, exactly.
Are they?
They're the home wrecking plant.
The bubbles
strong.
Last longer.
Still going strong.
We've been married for almost.
Can you tell we don't want to talk about this challenge?
I have a question.
No, Antonio's got stuff.
This is for Emily specifically. So Melissa makes this coconut corn soup. She uses the cob. It looks great. She's got all these other little elements in it: pickle, garlic, chives. She found at the market, puff grains, all of this. When she pours it tableside, it looks luscious and creamy. But then when they show like the hero shot of it, there are these like reddish, oily kind of sections of the soup. Do you have any? Go ahead. What is that? What's that from?
I don't know. It doesn't.
Yeah. It's a good question.
Might be some chili in there or something like that.
That's what I thought. I wondered if it was like chili oil or some kind of oil that I didn't pick up on or something from the coconut.
Yeah. Because
I was like, it looked different when she first poured it. I mean, if you're watching the episode again after this, you can see it.
Yeah.
They look like different dishes.
Yeah. Maybe it was underneath the bits.
I think it was chilly because like sometimes I'll be thrown when I'm transcribing the words on the screen for the dish names, and then they describe it somewhat differently, or sometimes mention things that aren't in the caption in the Chiron. So I think there was some chili in there.
When it comes to corn soup, because I love corn soup, but I've admittedly never made it. Was her using the cob to make the broth, is that like nouveau and innovative, or is that just like, oh no, when you make corn soup, you should do that?
That's a classic.
Yeah, that's sort of what the whole idea of making stocks and broths are, using aromatics and other ingredients that are either going to be included in the soup later on, or will at least sort of boost the basic flavor profiles that you have. So like, it makes perfect sense to use corn cobs in this. And it's a great no waste way of, using the whole ingredient as is. But yeah, corn cob is pretty normal in terms of corn soup.
Also in snowman building.
Yes.
Of the pipe variety? Is that what we're jumping to?
Yeah. Carrot nose? You can have a whole snowman too. I don't know what
you're using that corn cob for.
No way, snowman.
Yeah.
Top Chef elimination challenges that can also act as snowman building competitions. Go.
Snow
Dad 3.
Snow Dad's better than No Dad.
Please do not quote Jack Frost, Josh. Brian Voltaggio, I think, was another person that seemed like he was very well accepted, because like he was the one who like delivered, I guess, on the concept of like, we don't need meat. Like, this is filling enough with his, like, I guess the beat was sort of the substitute, but he has, I mean, I don't know if he has great respect for legumes, but he certainly has fondness for it, considering that he used it so well. And good on him for making, like, I feel like he was the one who had to make the big pivot because of Craig's absence. But I feel like to that point,
Craig,
while some people were gone, some people were inspired in the moment. Like Kevin finds these dates that were apparently right off the tree and is like, sure, I'll throw this into my dish. And people loved him for it.
Like the humble radish, what would the legume's descriptor be?
The sprouted legume. No, I don't know.
The reliable legume.
The pleasant legume.
Yeah, like legumes are really having a renaissance right now based on the quarantine. So
the soakable legume.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something to think about.
The earthy legume.
I'll be thinking about it all day. Brian Voltaggio uses pea tendrils. And Karen used pea shoots.
I don't like the sound of pea tendrils.
I don't like
the sound of either, to be fair. I am not a
painful,
underreported. I'm not a fan of pea shoots. Thing is, Karen said she wanted her dish to taste really grassy, and grassy is just not that pop.
Oh, if only Philip had done this challenge. Remember that time that he like used grass from the park in his dish?
Yes. No. Yeah.
Where is Philip on this season?
He's on a food network. He's probably on a Food Network show or something.
Yeah, he could easily pop up in the background of one of these challenges.
Yeah, this is in LA. Remember Mr. Yeah. Two Restaurants? Like, I'm surprised they did not visit any of his two restaurants on the Jonathan Gold Challenge.
We'll get there. Don't you
Isn't
worry.
His wife a vegan? Mm-hmm.
I think that's right. Underreported.
Yeah, and I think he actually met her at a 2 Chainz concert. I believe is what he said. I legit think that was the origin story.
Should we do a Top Chef?
Like, I made that.
California, where are they now?
Watch. I think we should do a rewatch, like, for our Patreon.
No, I would say rewatch if I remember Top Chef California correctly, rewatch the first half, because I think we remember us not being very fond of the second half when all the front runners go home and we're left with Taco Dude and Amar at the end.
Yeah, you know what? I think the second episode of that season is really the best one. I don't think it can get better than that.
Yeah, the most beautiful restaurant attendees I've ever seen on the show.
Just in the background, looking like they ate lunch.
The luxurious legume, is that a thing?
I think that works.
That's good.
Anybody else have any hot takes about the elimination challenge? I did like that Jen said she was going to rub it with jerk sauce. That's just very New Jersey.
I didn't love the look of her dish.
They tried to build some drama in, can Jen sink the ship? And like, clearly she wasn't going to sink.
No, they loved it. They loved her dish.
Yeah,
but was that like, I'm going to say luck, but like, was it a happy accident that someone happened to turn up the heat on her sauce, and she's like, "Oh, it's all burnt." But like,
you think somebody on her team didn't like the idea of a cashew butter underneath, and they turned it up on purpose? Is that what you're claiming?
Or maybe it was like a backseat driving thing, and they're like, "This could use a little more heat." Like, she doesn't believe me, but I'm going to do this for her. Trust me, I think it'll
be okay. I just feel like nobody should touch anyone else's dishes.
Oh, I agree. Yeah,
that's just
certainly without
asking for some trub.
Yeah, you need consent for that. I think something maybe worth talking about is the idea of these progression challenges, because like, I think it is very clear halfway through that the red team has lost. So is there a design flaw in the construction of the challenge robs this of some drama for television?
Also dumb and don't like, I understand what like a progression meal is, but like sometimes I'm like, well, I could go for a mid-meal dessert. Like, why not?
Do you think had they done three teams of four instead of two teams of six, would that have helped your problem, Josh?
Maybe it's just like when it's head to head like this, and if the idea is literally like this needs to have like forward momentum, this needs to like start at a place that builds from there. If you, you know, if you biff the start, you're not really going to recover from that. So I think just like with it being head to head in that way, I think it's tough. I think it robs you of some strong. I do think that sometimes the challenge element of Top Chef and the way that things play out in that regard, it does get you to this place where you just know which squad is at a loss. But I think like that's when it gets like when you're trying to hang a commercial break, like an act break on, oh shit, the cashew sauce has been burned. Like, I'm not that worried.
That was like the only time we've seen Jen in like 3 weeks, and then it had no impact on dish at all.
It's not going to be an egregious enough sin to undo everything that they've been doing already, because blue team lives together, dies together, right? You know, and so like they're obviously going to make it through the day. I don't know. Maybe it's just like a challenge element flaw. I don't know.
They live life one dish at a time.
Well, I guess speaking of that, right? We should probably bring up the malarkey Leanne stuff, because it was weird. It was very strange.
And also, they were arguing, and then neither of them went home. So it was like, going to do this next week, too.
The weird thing, though, was that like they were arguing, but they were like in agreement with each other. Well, I guess they weren't arguing. It was more so that malarkey was trying to save his own ass. Understandably so, I guess. But like, I don't know if he necessarily needs to make that argument, because I feel like another maybe testament of Top Chef is that like, even if somebody is working on your dish, if it's your dish, you take responsibility. Like back in Top Chef Boston, if we remember Restaurant Wars, there was that woman, Carrie Ann, who like got her
Carrie
dessert.
Carrie Ann, way too cool for seventh grade.
Woman.
Carrie Ann.
She's like one in a million. Yeah, she was watching herself in the reflection talking back to her during Restaurant Wars. The rest of her team like really botched her dessert. And at the end of the day, she got the blame for it. And I think even Leanne admits this. Like, I know malarkey might have put too little salt and olive oil on this, but like, I know it's my responsibility at the end of the day. And I think malarkey maybe should have realized that, because he didn't necessarily need to make that argument.
It wasn't that so much as if what I'm hearing, chefs, is if I'm correct, is that her hummus was also a little bit underseasoned.
Yeah, that was like
incredible.
It was
so passive aggressive. Oh,
it's like we're talking about how like there was like this, everybody was plating stuff, but it's not like there was a fundamental thing before that. I just want to make sure we're all agreed that there was issues beyond the plating. There was a hummus issue in general, right?
Like, oh. This has been one of the true highlights of the week for me right now in quarantine is 11 a.m. on Saturday mornings on the East Coast when we are gathering together to talk about Top Chef. But I'll say that like, the experience of watching these four episodes so far has been very unpleasant for me, because my team is getting eradicated.
No.
And Leanne is just like in constant danger of extinction. And I understand, because obviously I did not watch Last Chance Kitchen, that now Leanne is my only hope for any. So like, I love Leanne, but I'm kind of rooting for her to just lose already so I can enjoy
it. Pull the plug on your team?
Yeah, just call it a wash. Call it a wash, because it is going very poorly and it's very stressful. And this was the most stressful instance yet of when Malarkey is like,
I have a feeling it's going to get worse.
And when Malarkey does say like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I am hearing the reports of an unseasoned hummus. It's like, this is supposed to be soothing. So the draft has kind of really, it's very drafty in here as I'm watching Top Chef this season. So get me out of here.
Maybe we could just make better choices.
I know. I made horrible choices. Obviously.
Well, I also feel like to that point, like, because now a lot of the discussion and discourse amongst the Top Chef community has now unfortunately turned to like less from wow, these people are doing great, and more so why is Leanne still there, which is like not good. And we have this person like every season. Lisa herself was this person back in season 4, and I just feel like it's always
tough.
I hate that for Leanne.
I totally agree, Leanne, and that's a shit narrative to have to assign to Leanne, because she's awesome, best talking head on Best Thing I Ever Ate by far. And so like
2009,
every episode
he's in every episode,
he's in many of those episodes.
Yeah, they were all filmed like 10 years ago now.
Great. I'm gonna have to watch that.
Thanks, Cooking Channel. It's like really keeping up with that new programming, the aspect keeping fresh.
I love watching Unique Suites that are from like obviously
Unique Suites is what I'm talking about. Yeah.
No, I'm talking about Unique Suites.
Right, but the one that I was talking about wasn't actually Best Thing
I've Okay, cool.
Josh, maybe Antonio will swap Angelo for Leanne on your teams.
Leangelo.
Do you want Leanne, Antonio? And then I'll take Angelo and just accept defeat.
Josh, don't do that. Oh, so you want to like just completely
out.
You want to adopt a dead person at this point.
You want to raise the sale.
I want off I want off of Last Chance Kitchen Island.
It's really warm in my team.
Take my quick fire tokens, Antonio.
No. Quick fire tokens. I love that. You better get ready. I know that you have won fantasy baseball leagues before, Josh, but I can tell you aren't much of a sports fan, because this live and die stuff is the day to day. So it is rough. It's hard to watch play out. Real time. And it is, I truly believe, like, we have heard from people that have been on this podcast, that have been on Top Chef, like we hear in Mike, your exit interviews, and just other people that have talked after the show from Parade. We just, we hear about how you get in your own head on this show, and you get behind and you start trying to overcompensate, and you really get into this funk where you want to be top and you want to make up for the mistake that you made, and your inability to balance that out. You're constantly hustling to try to do better than you did. That is ultimately what can be your undoing. And I think Leanne is in the midst of that right now. And because it was filmed, because it's all playing out, we're having to watch it moment to moment. And it is rough because she never is the absolute worst, or because the judges know that she's better than what she's doing right now, and they're giving her the benefit of the doubt and maybe giving her a break moment to moment a little bit. Maybe that's entering into the judging a little bit. But what that means is we're going to see this week to week, unless or until she gets it together. And Emily, you were laughing a moment ago without spoiling Kurt and anyone else who isn't watching the premiere. One thing that was teased was certainly that Leanne will be in the thick of it again.
And so that
doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. They do this sometimes where they tease and it isn't what the show is.
Right,
but
I think that considering the specific Josh's thing, point. this is not a cashew chowder by comparison. You know, this is not a Jen being in trouble. This seems legitimately scary.
Feel free to talk about it. It's cool if the preview has fuel. If the preview is the best thing to talk about this episode,
I think
then
it
go
is
for
worth
it.
Talking about.
Spoiler alert: if you don't want to skip ahead, I don't know, 5 minutes or so until we get to LCK talk next week. Much like Survivor, they are doing an early loved ones challenge for the quick fire. They're doing sort of like what they did in season 14, where their loved one has a dish in front of them and they have to describe it to their partner, who then has to recreate the dish. But the elimination challenge is they have to cook alongside their loved ones. Actually, very similar to a challenge that Melissa won in Top Chef Boston. And Leanne is cooking with her mother. She apparently collapses.
Yeah, now I remember, and now I'm upset.
Her mother collapses during the prep, and Leanne has to go to the service all by herself.
Oh my god,
it's rough.
Or some kind of medevac. It looks like almost.
Oh my god, it's not all right. It's not okay. I love Leanne. I just want to make that very clear. I love Leanne. First pick on the board for me. I love Leanne. I hope everyone is happy and healthy and everyone's okay now.
Absolutely.
Especially now. it's just so stressful to me. Oh, God. And knowing that next week is like guaranteed going to be stressful city for me with Leanne. It's just too much. This is supposed to be soothing.
Okay, relax.
And ultimately in this episode, we say goodbye to Lisa, and I'm really sad to see her go. I think she's been doing some wonderful work in this season.
I was so surprised.
And, you know, especially compared to her, I'm gonna say edit in season four. And like, yeah, she said all those things. You know, something else about Lisa is she did just open her restaurant, Sweet Chili NYC. Mike, you mentioned, this was mentioned in your parade interview. And then somebody, one of the Rob Has a Podcast patrons messaged me on Instagram to say like, hey, can you just mention this on the podcast? So Sweet Chili, I believe it's in Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. It's Lisa's restaurant. She opened it about 5 months ago. And with all of this going on, she needs help because a lot of the grants that the government's giving out and everyone's giving out, they're for restaurants that have been open for more than 6 months. And she's been open for about 5 months at this point. So she's having a hard time getting anything to support her. So if you go to Sweet Chili NYC Instagram, there's a post from a couple days ago with a link of how to help out with that. If you're in Brooklyn and you want to get a gift card or something like that for that restaurant,
doing it as we speak.
Amazing. So that would be fantastic. And I know that gift cards aren't going to keep her afloat. So if you can give to that, Josh, I'll send this to you and you can put in the show notes or whatever.
I'll put in the show notes, and I'll also say with Antonio's call last week for if anyone wants us to buy a gift card to Chef Jim's restaurant, I'm going to throw out the same offer here for Sweet Chili. If you're in the New York area and you want a gift card to Lisa's restaurant, I will do that up to $25 gift cards up to $200. So, let's get some support for Lisa and slide into my Instagram DMs if you want that, and I will hook you up.
Josh, Sweet Chili's right around the corner from like Pine Box Rock Shop and Roberto's and places that you and I have gone to together. So it is right there in the thick of it.
That's a great spot. Great area.
It's got to be tough for her because, you know, she spent, I think, like 7 years on a food truck or something. And I think she had finally just been able to really accumulate the funds and the interest to open this restaurant. And then for this to happen is just absolutely disastrous. My heart goes out to her. I agree with you, Haley. You know, maybe this is a bit of a hot take, but I was sad to lose people like Lisa and Angelo early. These people who have changed so markedly as people between the times that we've seen them on seasons. Yes, I know that that can be a bit boring. And I would say that maybe Angelo and Lisa are not necessarily the riveting television that they were back then. But like, I felt the same way when Colin and Christy came back for The Amazing Race. There's something to me personally, a little therapeutic about like watching people be able to change their bad habits and fundamentally grow up off camera and to see who they become. So while I agree that like, while it's awesome to see Eric sort of continue his momentum from last season, I also have a great time reinvesting and investigating these people who were so markedly different years ago. Was Lisa the most riveting television this season? No, but she seemed to be in a much, much better place than she was in season four. And that made me really happy.
And I will say, I think that's one of the reasons why I loved Last Chance Kitchen so much, because I felt like we got to see a lot of her personality that we didn't get to see in this season. And I would say the same thing for Jamie this episode of Last Chance Kitchen too. Like we've been watching these people for a couple weeks now, and I feel like maybe we haven't got a deep dive into some of who these people are. And I loved Lisa in this Last Chance Kitchen. You know, I thought she was fun and great, and she was happy to be there. She was so excited to be cooking again. And I thought she did great in that challenge, and I'm excited to, spoiler alert, see her continue in Last Chance Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like life is a progressive dinner, Mike.
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. And sometimes we are, you know, Lisa was the crudité in season four, and now she's like, she's Nini's dessert by season 17, which was delicious. But yeah, LCK, Sasto is dethroned as the LCK champion of season 17.
His heart was just not.
It was a tough challenge. So basically, because Lisa did not do so well with fried Brussels sprouts, they had to cook a dish using only the deep fryer. And from the beginning, Lisa is cheering and Joe Sasto is jeering. And you could kind of tell where this was going.
He's like, I want to make pasta. I can't make pasta. It was a lot of fun. You got to see her, I think, full of joy. And I really like the beginning exchange where Tom's kind of like, in the process of setting up the challenge, he's like, I think fried food should be hot, don't you? She's like, yes, chef. Well, you can have a different opinion. No, chef, I'm not going to have a different opinion. You're the chef. I agree with you, chef. Even the personality that Haley was talking about was like just right there from the get-go. It was a fun challenge from that all the way through her. I'm kind of doing a potato latke more.
Yeah,
potato
Josh,
fritter.
You would love what Lisa made, especially in honor of Passover. She made latkes, pork chops, apples with honey. Like she fully admitted it was a fully Jewish dish.
You know what's funny? last night for dinner, Emily, I know we're skipping ahead to the part where we talk about what we made this week. Emily made pork tenderloin with Brussels sprouts and applesauce. So like very, very close.
It's like Emily doing what would Tom do?
I know. Yeah. was that on this week? They have one?
I didn't see it, but I don't know where to watch it here. So, Was there?
Oh,
yeah. I don't really remember it, but there was one.
My favorite part of Last Chance Kitchen by far was when every single person was doubting Lisa that she had flash fried her pork too early and then, you know, it wasn't going to be cooked or it wasn't going to be juicy. It was going to be dry and it was going to be cold. And Tom was like, you know what? You were right. That was a perfect pork chop. And one of her confessionals, she was like, they don't trust me to know what I'm doing. I've fried 5 billion pork chops before. Like, I know what to do and they don't trust me. And I'm so glad that they're like, you were right.
Yeah. Compare that to Joe Sasto. Like, yeah, I'm going to fry some cheese and then do these sweet potatoes and then just throws out the sweet potatoes halfway through. And just even comparing the two dishes, like hers just looked much more interesting. It had so many more components involved. Joe's was a giant ball of cheese.
And
with tomatoes.
Joe said Lisa's looked clunky, and yeah, I was shocked because I thought Lisa's was beautiful.
Especially by comparison.
Joe's was clunky. It was just, do I want to eat a ball of fried cheese? Like, absolutely, yes, I do.
Yeah, that sounds great.
But I just thought it was Joe's dish was like simple and like maybe not like the most well executed, and I just probably wouldn't put a ball of cheese with some like creamy sweet potatoes to begin with. I think the tomato relish should have been his go-to right off the bat, but it's also kind of just like boring. Like, I've had cheese and tomato sauce before. Like, it's not new.
I did applaud his ingenuity, or what I thought was ingenious, in terms of like using the fryer to boil to heat up a cooking pot. Like, in terms of as a heating element beyond simply throwing stuff into the fryer. I thought that was an interesting use of the fryer I hadn't thought of. Mm-hmm. But other than that.
Do we think, because I've been thinking about this, because in the past two seasons, we've had someone come back from LCK around like the final 10, final 9, and we're starting to get there. But I guess my question is, are they going to have two returnees, or are they going to go back to only one returnee? Because I hope
they have two.
Because the previous time they've done two returnees is when they brought in the alumni through Last Chance Kitchen. So
they're all alumni now.
Maybe is that the rule? If you're an alumni in LCK, you get to come back early on? Because if that's the case, then we might have someone come back a couple episodes from now.
Because at that point, I misremembered. Because even then, with the alumni version of it, they were having two or three competitors at a time, or four.
Yeah, they're doing like Truels Redemption Island style, where like one person would go, sometimes two people would go. But yeah, I mean, if we're sticking to the formula from the past couple seasons, expect someone to come back from Last Chance Kitchen. If not next episode, then the episode after that, which is pretty good for Lisa's chances.
Probably right before it gets to 8, probably right before Kitchen Wars. Is that Restaurant Wars?
Rescue Wars.
What a gosh, where am I? Right before Restaurant Wars is probably when somebody would potentially come back first. And I can't see them doing Restaurant Wars and having somebody come back and bumping it back up to 8. That's my opinion.
Maybe they'll do 2 Restaurant Wars then.
No, please don't.
Restaurant Wars War 2. No, I got nothing.
Yeah, Restaurant Wars. Yeah, I don't know.
They seem to be really light on twists so far this season, and I feel like we're inviting it.
Yeah, we haven't had a sudden death.
Yeah, I feel like we're inviting it.
I hate those. So I would rather see somebody come back midway through and a double elimination somewhere along the way than a sudden death quickfire.
Well, we have one less person than we're used to, or at least than last season. So I think that also means that maybe we don't need one.
Good call.
If we do have it, I hope it's that format where it's not necessarily that one person goes home. It's like the person gets to challenge somebody, and if they beat the person, then nobody goes home. We've seen that a couple of times, yeah. But I'm hoping they just don't do the sudden death quickfire. Those are never.
Maybe they realize, unlike other reality shows, that if you bring back a team of all stars, you let them be the show. You don't need to throw a bunch of twists at the audience. Like when you've got these people, the last thing you want to do is screw them over or put them in a situation where twist is the reason they don't continue. So long may that continue for sure.
From your mouth to Tom's hairless ears.
Oh, my.
I hated that, Michael.
How dare you?
You lost talking privileges for the next 3 minutes.
Do you apply the Nair with a Q-tip in the ear or the Q-tip become just a stick because there's Nair on it?
I don't know what I'm more triggered by, the allusions to the edge of extinction or the return of the Nair.
What have you guys been cooking?
Well, there was that pork tenderloin I described that Emily made.
Josh, what have you been cooking?
The smoothie every morning. I'm the smoothie operator every morning. Every morning. Smoothies coming
every
from
morning. Josh.
Why would I cook when you are like the queen of the kitchen and I will never be able to create anything that even remotely lives up to
Josh
what
essentially
do.
Made that just essentially made the culinary argument of why buy the cow when you can get the milk for free.
Oh,
yeah,
dear.
Basically.
I think I heard Don Draper say that same thing to Betty once.
Yeah, homegirl might need a break. About that.
I'm just joshing.
I made waffles with sourdough discard, which was really like the first time I've ever done
what
that.
What am I supposed I've been reheating pizza? She made sourdough fucking waffles.
You should definitely talk over me in this moment.
Oh no! All right, now I will say I do feel uncomfortable around drama off show as well.
Nah, it's okay.
Sorry.
You've been really helpful. Oh
boy, where's that succulent? Is that succulent slowly browning in the background while this conversation is going on?
Died years ago.
It's like the rose from Beauty and the Beast.
Exactly. Podcasts this week. How about that?
Yeah.
God.
No.
Delicious.
We did that. We
stole some chocolate chips.
Yeah. I made chocolate chip cookies, which are basically gone at this point.
That's mostly because of me.
Yeah.
I think, Emily, you and Angela will have to compare chocolate chip cookie recipes because you both put out, I'm assuming you've put out absolutely stellar recipes as well. But I'm very intrigued as to like whatever the right mixture of things are. We've all seen that graphic, right? Of like when you change certain ingredients in chocolate chip cookies and what they look like. That's fascinating to me.
I mean, for me, I just use an egg substitute. That's the only difference from the Nestle Toll House recipe, which is just energy egg replacer. You can find that at like Whole Foods or other like specialty markets, although it's gotten more mainstream the last few years.
Is that the one that smells like algae?
No, that's the...
Your mother, who is also allergic to eggs, has like an egg replacer that it like comes in an egg carton.
Yeah, which is
and
like
then
part
when you
of,
open
like,
it
fun.
Up, they're all like these tiny little pouches of yellow algae that like you mix together to form eggy consistency.
It smells so bad.
Foul.
Well, it's supposed to smell sulfurous like an egg when you're cooking it.
Foul.
Except you're just like, who farted?
And your mom was like, oh, I made an omelet out of it. It's pretty good. We're like,
I don't understand the packaging. Are they trying to trick people? Because I feel like more often than not, people are going to be like, the great way for these eggs. What the hell is this?
Like, oh my God, it's like an eggless egg? Like, this is going to be interesting. And then you open it up and it is like these tiny little pouches of
it's powder.
Algae treasure.
Yeah. It's gross.
Algae treasure.
She keeps giving it to me like every year for the holidays. And I'm like, I'm not using this. You can have it back. And she like swears that it's like a great substitute in this like cranberry bread she makes for us, which is actually very delicious.
It's very good.
You don't need it in that. Like
Haley's mother gives her apple pies every year. Emily's mother gives her
algae pouches. Algae pouch.
My mom's also going to drop off half a turkey dinner on tomorrow.
Yum.
Yes.
Yum.
That's awesome.
Can't wait for that.
Wait, what's going to be in the turkey dinner? Do you know?
I believe turkey and mashed potatoes. And I am praying to the Lord above us that she includes at least half a can of the cranberry sauce that comes just, that. You slide it out and it's the same shape.
Yeah, what's
the
point with making the homemade stuff?
But you might want to call her instead of
I don't know. Because I feel like depends on like, do you want sauce or do you want something closer to like a cranberry chutney? You know,
because no, I only want the canned stuff. It
has to be in the shape of the can too.
Listen, my grandmother makes a beautiful cranberry sauce with cranberries and orange and zest and everything. I only want the canned stuff.
Do you want her to record the sound of it coming out of the can too? Wow.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Emily, what else have you made this week?
What else did I make? I made like a Middle Eastern rice dish with roasted veggies.
What am I supposed to do? it's just nonstop. It's very complimentary. You are incredible. You're incredible in the kitchen. It's just like what you're doing is magic. It's absolute magic to me.
Thank you.
Josh, I think it's your time. I think it's time for the apprentice to become the master. I think you should make Josh for a week cook.
Here's an idea, Emily, in honor of next week's challenge where the loved one has to help in some way.
Make breakfast every day for us.
The smoothie?
It's just the smoothie, but it's every day.
Haley, what have you been cooking?
What did I make this week? I'd like to do some like lazy hacks. So I had a container of the Trader Joe's miso instant ramen in my cupboard. So I poured that into a bowl, added some more ramen noodles and added some corn and some shrimp just to like bump it up a bit. What else did I make? I made a wonderful tortilla soup from the Joy of Cooking this week.
Yeah, that looked really good.
Thanks. Yeah. So again, buy a copy of The Joy of Cooking. After we pumped it up last time, a couple of people were like, went out and bought a copy. No, they didn't go out and bought a copy. They bought a copy. So that's wonderful. And then dessert last weekend, I made edible cookie dough. So you just leave out the eggs, you heat up the flour a little bit, and it's wonderful. I like to just stick it in the fridge, and then I can have just a little spoonful, and it's perfectly satisfying.
Nice.
I think following up on that, I just want to also recommend if anybody out there doesn't listen to the Sporkful podcast, they had an episode a few weeks ago about the kind of the technicalities and the ins and outs of writing recipes. And it was really, really interesting in terms of like the sort of structure and like where you put the ingredient versus like the actual measurement associated with the ingredient. And they talk about like the different additions of The Joy of Cooking. It was a really good episode. So Sporkful podcast, I recommend that to folks.
What about you, Antonio?
Well, I didn't. I went out to fish fry yesterday and did some carry out curbside because Cincinnati is a very super Catholic city. So Lent is a big deal. It was Good Friday and fish fries normally are the thing that everybody does. You go to a local parish fish fry. You really support them. They all have something a little different. They're all fun. But that's really been low this week. So I supported my favorite local bar restaurant, Arnold's Bar and Grill, the oldest bar in Cincinnati. They were doing a curbside fish fry. It was insane. We sat in our cars. We pulled around the block. I waited an hour, picked up fish fry that I took and dropped off to various family members without, unfortunately, getting to interact with them. But picked up that. We're going to do Easter Sunday, some bolognese and some fresh pasta. So,
looking forward to that for sure. I had my first little dalliance with like Easter-based food in a major capacity because Angela made Easter bread. She went on a statewide hunt for yeast, and she was finally
Easter. I've been delivering yeast to people.
I did not realize you were a yeast courier.
Happy Easter.
I brought yeast to Staten Island the other day.
Yeah, I saw that. You have to have the risen ingredient in an Easter bread. It's very important.
Yeah, exactly. Otherwise, you just get my end with the matzah, but I won't complain. But yeah, so she... For those that don't know, Easter bread is sort of like a brioche. It's like the consistency is sort of like halfway between like pretzel bread and challah in terms of like taste. And with
that
a nice little
like the omega bread. Like that sounds like the king of the breads.
It's pretty damn
it's the
good.
Alpha and the omega, Josh.
Yeah. A to Z. But yeah, so she baked a bunch, brought them to her parents, and then I had the rest last night. Other than that, I've continued my Korean kick. This week, one of our delivery cooking services, we made a Korean sesame taco with marinated beef and pickled veggies and a chili sour cream that might be one of like the best things I've had out of that service. So and we had some bibimbap as well last night. I don't know why I'm just really on a big Korean kick all of a sudden.
I love Korean. You're hooked.
That's great.
But it's awesome.
You had more kogi, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of been a frugal week except for that. So like I've gotten the habit of getting like a large pizza with half off on Mondays and kind of stretching that for lunches throughout the week. But yeah, last night I went to the kogi barbecue truck
that's parked behind my place, and I got the spicy pork burrito, which was amazing, and I got their sweet chili chicken quesadilla, which was amazing.
That looked awesome. That
then I want to my attempt at making an egg sandwich went really well. I've learned that I throw butter in the pan, and that keeps the eggs from sticking. And I put it in a tortilla wrap, fried eggs in a tortilla wrap. I'm not a big fan of scrambled. And then I actually had these pepperoni and mozzarella wrap-ups that I diced up, softened in the microwave, threw those on top of the eggs. This is a real bachelor effort. And then I put some crumbled blue cheese and sriracha on top of that. Oh, and before I put the eggs in the pan, I fried up some garlic and shallot. Mm. And so the eggs kind of cooked in that and the butter. And then I put all of that in the wrap with the pepperoni, the cheese, the mozzarella, and then the blue cheese on top of that with some sriracha. So it was kind of a little bit of the, well, what do I have in my fridge? But it ended up being like really amazing and was really good.
I was going to say, would you make any tweaks for like the beta version of it?
That kind of was the beta version. I mean, come on, I took pepperoni roll-ups and threw them onto an egg sandwich.
That sounds delicious.
That's awesome. Yeah.
I think I had bought at the local Bristol Farms this three pack of, it was pepperoni roll-ups, something else, another kind of roll-up, and then the third kind of column was these prosciutto roll-ups. I just have the prosciutto ones left, so I might actually try to recreate it again. Yeah, fruit roll-ups. get the little wrap off. I might attempt it again because I have more of these meat roll-ups, which is when you were talking about ham rolls earlier, Haley, it made me think of that. Anyway, so I'll experiment with that more, but I'm going to try to maybe dine out or order in, I should say, pick up more this week. I just not in a cooking mood, but I am in a support my local restaurant mood.
Yeah, to that end, go ahead.
No, you go. You're better at talking than I am.
Not true.
Now I feel so much pressure. What I was going to say is, before we wrap up, I wanted to, this challenge, when Gail remarked on Greg's carrot or Gregory's carrot and said, it just reminds you of the way a carrot should be cooked. Careful. I was reminded, just in these local times of a restaurant when I lived in Miami that I really love called Blue Collar. And it's in, I think near the little Haiti area of Miami, in the late higher 60s on Biscayne Boulevard. It's a very small little restaurant. You guys should definitely look it up. If you are able in that area, they have a vegetable board where they just do rotating vegetables and you can order just off the vegetable board. And no matter which vegetable you get, what you're going to get is what Gail said about Gregory's carrot. There it is again, where you're getting basically, this is how this vegetable should be prepared. This never, like, I never really realized how good X vegetable could be until I ate it. And this whole vegetarian meal, it's not a vegetarian restaurant by any stretch. They have incredible food on that menu. And it is not, it's modestly priced. It's not break the bank expensive. So if you're in South Florida at all, I would highly recommend that you swing by and support them in any way you can, especially their vegetables. They're so, so good. And I did hear from a couple people about supporting the Hummingbird Way, Jim Smith's restaurant. We were able to get in touch, Jim and I, and got some gift cards for some folks. I don't know if anyone else was, but I would just really encourage. That's great. I would really encourage everybody to support your local restaurants the best you can and to the extent that you feel comfortable. Obviously, if you don't feel comfortable doing that, if you're at a high risk, or if there's some reason that you don't want to leave the house, do not do that. Don't feel like you have to do this in order to put yourself at jeopardy. But if you're getting takeout anyway, or if you're doing stuff like that, this is the best thing we can do, I think, right now, is buy gift cards and support these people in the takeout way. So I was just really reminded of Blue Collar. It's a small restaurant, and they just do the vegetables so, so well there. I miss it. That's one of them, probably the thing I miss most about Miami. And I really didn't like the city overall, but I love that.
Well, on that note, I would say if people out there want us to shout out restaurants, whether it be their own or restaurants that they want to support, we will be your mouthpieces. Send us stuff, send us names, send us places, and we'd be more than happy to call them out.
Like some info on like what the dishes are that you love there, what it is you love about the restaurant. We'll be like your own little personal triple D over here. We'll
that's some donkey sauce, Josh.
Haley, you seem to be muted. If you tried to say something again, our $20,000 patrons noticed that Haley spoke and no words came out.
I'd accidentally. I have a mute button on my mic here, and I must have bumped it. Anyways, I want to be Guy Fieri. That's what I said.
You're in. That's fantastic. The sweet chili, the gift card offer is out there. I just purchased one myself already. What I will say is I will purchase an additional $200 worth of gift cards. And if you hit me up, and if you're in New York, up to 10 people, they do them in $20 increments, it seems. If you are in New York, slide into my DMs on Instagram. And if you want one, at Round Howard, just give me your name and your email address, and I will get one sent to you. And if fewer than 10 people do it, then we'll divide and conquer, and you'll have more than $20, and that'll be great. But definitely let's do that. Let's support Lisa here, and hopefully she's able to push forward through Last Chance Kitchen. If you just want to support her on your own too, we will put that link to the gift card for Lisa's restaurant in the show notes.
Yeah, and if you're looking, go ahead.
No.
You're better at talking than I am, please.
if you want to send us pictures of what you're making, you know, takeout you've gotten from your local restaurants, we'd love to see it. We all love seeing it. We all love getting messages on Twitter, as long as they are nice. Yeah. So just follow all of us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at @hstrong_, and you can check out my blog, strongtakes.ca.
I'll jump in. I'm at Kurt Clark with 2 C's on all your major platforms and some minor ones.
I am at AC Mazzaro on Twitter and Instagram. And what I was going to say is follow chefs that you like, because it seems like a lot of them are doing either things to support what they're doing, or they're like this morning, Hugh Atchison tweeted and said, you know, I'm taking my van to the grocery and I'm loading it up and I'm buying as much as I can for a local mobile home park in Athens, Georgia, where I am. Here's my Venmo if anybody wants to chip in. And I think he's over $5,000 last time I checked. So he's basically just thinking globally and acting locally by reaching out to his feed. I know Isaac Toops is doing the same thing in Louisiana and feeding people. Your favorite chef is up to something. Either they need help or they need help and they're helping others, which is what a lot of people are doing. So just follow them on your social platforms, and I'm sure you'll find a way to chip in if you're not getting one from us or from other places.
Definitely. And I'm at Emelet, like an omelet, but with an E. Feel free to send any questions you guys have about home cooking if you need help. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm happy to kind of be, you know, your soundboard or, you know, kind of figure out ingredients for you. I know we're all getting a little bit tired of what we're seeing in the fridge and in our pantries, but I will gladly do my best to try to spice things up for you. So shoot me a message on Instagram or Twitter.
And I'm at Rand Howard on all of the social platforms, and I'll just do an additional plug for at Emelet on Instagram, especially where she is posting outfits of the day.
Oh my God, that is the highlight of every single day.
It has become the greatest thing on social media, is Emily's daily outfit of the day.
Which are like not very exciting.
No, they're very exciting. They are very exciting, and they come complete with Emily is doing incredible character work, building very rich mythology of different Rolodex of characters on a daily basis. So I cannot recommend at Emelet on Instagram nearly enough. If you are not following her already, you are missing out on delicious food that she is cooking every single day and posting about. Easy access to Emily for any questions you have about cooking, of course.
Wow, but, you just pimped me out.
But what you are mostly missing out on is the outfit Luke's. Of the day, which is just the best content.
I'm taking outfit of the day off for the weekends, though, because everyone needs a little refresher and a little break.
Listen, even the Lord rests on a day, you know?
Correct.
Why not Emily Fox? Yeah. You can follow me at @MikeBloomType. Haley mentioned it before, but I am doing weekly exit interviews with the chef Teston. Spoke with Lisa, spoke with Jamie. That's up there too. That's a little late, but if you want to get their thoughts, and especially as Haley sort of mentioned, the resources that they give out as well, whether individually or on a group basis, as to, you know, how to support chefs during these times. But it's really interesting to talk with them about, you know, their return engagements. You can also check out, you know, the rest of the stuff that we're all doing. I know a few of us are rather populous with our podcast, whether that be on Post Show Recaps, Rob has a podcast, or wherever else. We're trying to fill your earbuds with as much goodness as possible in these trying times, and we have so much fun on this podcast, so hopefully we were serving up another great helping of the Top Chef panel round table, whatever Haley called it this episode.
you
nailed it.
Yeah, so thank you guys so much for joining us again, both to the panel and to all of our listeners. We've just been having such a wonderful time doing this podcast. And we've always had fun doing this throughout the years. But I think
this year
in this season is taking on a whole new meaning and life for us. I've said it many weeks, and this is absolutely the highlight of my week. I love talking to you guys. I love talking about this show. And the people who are listening and sending us messages are so wonderful. So thank you so much for being along with us for this journey. Even if you guys didn't listen, we'd probably still do this, but we appreciate the downloads. And with that, you guys can pack your knives and go. Bye.
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 Bye. Bye.